Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Emma Gunn Show. Thank you for joining me. In this episode, you're not just getting one guest, you are getting two. First up, we have Leona Lewis. And then in the second half of the show, you will hear my chat with Georgia Arnold. Now, let me tell you a little bit about how this conversation came to be. It was all a bit of a whirlwind, and less than 12 hours after being asked if I was available, if I was able to take the podcast to them, I was on a train into London making this all happen, and so really didn't know what to expect. And Leona and Georgia were both incredible, incredible guests, and I was invited along by Kiehl's, who partner with the MTV Staying Alive Foundation, for which Leona Lewis is an ambassador. And what the MTV Staying Alive Foundation does, it's a global charity that's dedicated to stopping the spread of HIV/AIDS, and it's headquartered in the UK and is represented this year by Leona. So I went along to MTV. I felt a bit old, gotta be honest, but ended up sitting in a studio with Leona talking about happiness, talking about how she finds her happiness, and talking about why she is such a passionate humanitarian. We talked about her animal sanctuary, which is called Hopefield Animal Sanctuary, Brentwood in Essex. All of the links to that are going to be in the show notes. Just how she sets goals for life, how she stays positive, how she's been inspired by the women's movement, about women supporting women, collaboration. There's so much. I mean, as you can imagine, time with a global superstar like Leona is pretty rare, and she was very generous with her time and gave me, I had a wonderful chat with her and thought she was brilliant. Then I talked to Georgia Arnold, who is the executive director of the Staying Alive Foundation, and I loved hearing all of her stories. This is somebody who's been with MTV for over 20 years, who was there back in the good old days, or basically when I was an avid viewer. And it turns out she is a big part of the reason, and MTV a huge part of the reason, why my generation are so well informed about things like safe sex, because we used to turn on TV, MTV, and there would be adverts about condoms, there would be adverts about why you should be safe, and it really did, in a very non-scary way, make you, it was just prevalent on the channel of, well, this is something that you have to be safe about, this is something you have to be educated about. And I honestly, and I admit this in the show, I had kind of thought that it was a problem that had gone away, that AIDS was something that we were on top of, we being the medical world, being that it was something that could be managed. And it's horrifying to speak to Georgia to understand that not only is it still a huge problem, but it's the number two killer globally of young people, which is just huge. I did not realise that was still the case. So I will let her talk about all of the incredible work they do and all of the efforts that they are putting into place to change that and to make sure that it isn't a killer. As you'd expect from the show, we also chat about how she stays motivated, how she remains inspired, and what are the things that she does outside of work to help with such a busy, busy role. Incidentally, one of the first questions I talked to Leona about was about happiness. Because before I was able to get my one-on-one time with them, they did a panel discussion that was broadcast on MTV Facebook Live. The link to MTV's Facebook page will be in the show notes. and happiness came up more than once, and I asked her about the song Happy, and I will let you get into the show to hear about what she has to say about that. But I hadn't listened to it for ages, but I knew that in it she says, I just want to be happy, so that's my hook. I, not 5 minutes ago, just listened to it again and have just bawled my eyes out, so maybe that says something about me more than anything else. But if you're feeling a little bit, what's the word, despondent, or maybe feeling like you're hitting your head against a brick wall, I would actually recommend that as a song to listen to. It's just gone into my Spotify playlist for when I need to kick up the rear end. So that's just a little more input from me. Take it or leave it. Enjoy the song or don't. Don't forget, stay around until after the theme music at the end of the show, where you can find out how to stay in touch, how to tweet me, how to follow me on Instagram, and everything else that you might want to know about the show. But without any further ado, here they are, Leona Lewis and Georgia Arnold. Leona Lewis is actually joining me, and I kid you not, in the studio, because you're at, what do you call this? Is it a soundboard?
Sound desk, yeah.
Sound desk, which
yeah,
looks...
I'm like, am I recording a song? What's happening right now?
You're very welcome to, if you want. But we're talking to you today because you've very generously given us your time, because you're here with the MTV Staying Alive Foundation,
yes.
Of which you are the new ambassador.
Yes.
And you, which is in association with Kiehl's,
mm-hmm.
which is fabulous. I'm linking to the Facebook Live so people can see that chat. But... picking up from that, you talked about the song Happy, and I was so thrilled when you mentioned that song, because it's a song that I sing along to and find myself feeling really positive and motivated and inspired.
Yeah.
And you talked about seeing somebody, I think it was on The Voice, singing it, and how it made you feel. And the lyric, I just want to be happy,
mm-hmm.
is actually really bold. It's quite a bold statement. Can you tell me a little bit about how you came to write that song and why saying that was so vital to you?
So I wrote that song with Ryan Tedder, and we wrote the song because I think that's what basically all humans want, is to just be happy, to be fulfilled. And we wrote it, that the lyrics are, so what if it hurts me, so what if I break down, so what if the world just throws me off the edge. So it's about all the hardships and the times we face that maybe, you know, are negative, but what we kind of gain through that, and the experiences we gain, and what we all kind of, what we basically all want. Mm. So it was, I remember writing the song, it was a few years ago now, but seeing the girls singing it, and it just brought me back to when I first wrote the song.
Mm.
Because sometimes the meaning of the songs change over the years, and it has changed for me, but seeing her sing it took me back to the heart of when I first wrote the song, which is why I brought it up in the talk just now.
Because actually, to say I want to be happy is a really powerful declaration.
Mm.
And I think we're all on life's journey, as it were. Mm. And what makes you happy, as you said, there's an evolution.
Yeah.
10 years ago isn't what necessarily makes you happy now. But have you, in your own life, been at a place where you've actually had to say, well, what does make me happy?
Yeah, definitely. I was thinking about this the other day, actually. It's so weird that you bring it up, but I was thinking about what is it that I really kind of want, or what really fulfills me, and what more do I want to achieve, what more do I want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember, say, 10 years ago, I'd be like, okay, well, I really want a successful career, I want to have records out, I want to do the... Okay, so I've had that, I've done that, I'm still obviously on the journey, but if from people on the outside looking in, I've had a relative success, but I don't just stop there, because so you've got to the destination where I wanted to get to, so what now, what is going to fulfill me now, what more do I want? And obviously to keep performing and to tour and to keep doing my music is of course still one side of that, but other things like spending time with my family more now makes me really happy. I have a lot of animals as well, spending time with them, making sure they're good. I have an animal sanctuary, making sure that that's all kind of flowing and getting what it needs to survive and keep and be sustainable. So different kind of, I don't know, it's, there's never a destination. I feel like it's just an ongoing, continuous journey and evolution.
I think that's, you've almost said something that I said this morning to a friend. We were talking about happiness, which is, again, so bizarre that it's ended up coming up in this interview. Mm. And the exact same thing came up of happiness isn't a destination. We all strive for a place.
Yeah.
But it's actually a continuous pursuit.
Yeah, for sure.
And always sort of knowing and checking in with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you said, actually, on the Facebook Live that I really wanted to ask you about, I thought was brilliant, where you said that you try to do something every day that pushes you outside of your comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah.
How did you decide that that was a way that would actually help you on that path to happiness?
Well, every time I've done something that's pushed me outside of my comfort zone, especially when it pushes me outside, like, to the extreme,
mm-hmm.
Has led me to a place where I've learned so much about myself, and it's just challenged me in ways that I would... in ways that I've grown and that I wouldn't have grown if I never pushed myself. So to do one thing that scares you, like today, even sitting in that room in front of a room full of people, I'm a musician and a singer. Like, I don't often go out and give speeches or talks about things, but this is an issue that I'm really passionate about. Mm. And I knew that this sitting in that room full of people would get the word out there, spread awareness, so I'm pushing myself to do it.
Mm.
And from it, I'm going to grow and hopefully do more and gain more awareness, raise more awareness. So I think it just has a knock-on effect. Mm. And so, yeah, to do something that pushes yourself, that scares you every day, is very important.
For you, personally, what does it feel like when you know that you're in that zone outside of your comfort zone?
It feels like I'm alive, because it's not kind of just, you know, you can kind of get in your routine and go along and do the thing and blah, 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 and do this and shopping and pick up this and I go home and go sleep. But, like, it feels like, oh my god, I'm alive, because I think I'm more in the moment. I'm not thinking about the past, I'm not thinking about the future, I'm just thinking about now.
Mm.
And I feel like when you're in the moment, that's the only time when you feel truly alive.
That's a big thing, particularly in meditation and yoga, is the whole concept of being present. Do you meditate? Do you do yoga?
I do meditate. I do yoga. I do a lot of awareness work. Like I said, like, being in the moment is so... it's just vital to us. And I practice that a lot. And I'm like, I always forget about it, like, but I try and, like, remind myself to stay in the moment. And I guess that's why I love performing, and that's why I love pushing myself outside of the comfort zone, because that's, you can't think about anything else.
Mm. Do you think that being outside of your comfort zone perhaps is something that you do because you were put in a situation that was very bizarre and unique, especially at the time?
Yeah,
that must have been constantly week on week. You're in a live television competition, and they're like juggernauts, they just go, and you're along for the ride in many ways.
Did
that feeling become familiar to you in a way?
Yeah, and that was a huge push. Like, that was something that I'd never done before. I was every single week, I think 13 million people or something like that tuned into the show. I mean, you can't really get any more outside your comfort zone. So that became a familiar feeling to me. And from that has, you know, it opened up so many doors for me.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you've had an incredible career. And I wanted to talk about, in the Facebook Live, which again we're going to link to in the show notes, you were everyone on the panel was asked about the inspirational people in their lives. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned your mum. And I've often wondered what it must be like for someone who, at a young age, goes through an experience that their parents perhaps haven't been through, because you have to navigate that landscape, and it must be... it's a steep learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
How did you handle it?
So my parents are... I'm so lucky. They are, like, my biggest advocates, and my mum, like I said, she's very inspiring to me. She's actually just finishing up another degree that she's just went back to school for, like, 4 years ago, I think. But she's always constantly pushing herself, constantly learning, and doesn't put any limits on herself. You know, she's, I don't know, how old am I? 30. So she's around 50, and, you know, still, like, educating herself. Mm. And so that's very inspiring to me. But with regards to being in the show, they were very grounding for me.
Mm.
And I think that is what was important, because it was like a whirlwind. Mm. Like, you could literally get caught up in the crazy tornado, but they were always like holding me down. Mm. And making sure that I was grounded and remembering to enjoy the experience as. Mm. Well, I remember my mum kept saying too.
Yeah, because even regardless of the show, then just fame generally,
yeah,
then just sort of your anonymity not being there anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember I wanted to ask you about self-confidence.
Mm.
Because it is a becoming famous, losing your anonymity, all of these things is quite challenging, different thing. And I remember something that still makes me really smile is, I think after the first week of the live show, the gentleman that you'd been working for, without saying anything, just put an ad for your job, because he said, well, she's not.
Yeah.
Coming back.
Yeah.
And that kind of confidence that someone else had in you,
yeah,
is really powerful.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember when I did the audition, like, I didn't tell anyone. Mm-hmm. And then it aired and I came into work and I was a little bit late. And he was like, oh, it must have been from all the autographs you were signing on your way to work. And I was like, oh, you saw it. He's like, everyone saw it. But it was so cool, like, working with him. He was like a guitarist himself, actually. Like,
oh, really?
A frustrated musician. And we used to, like, sit in the office and just do music when we were supposed to be working. But, he was a big supporter.
Mm.
Michael.
Yeah, really about self-confidence is that they had confidence. Yeah. In you, they could see, but it's sometimes difficult in your own skin to. Yeah. See your own skill and your talent. How did you get on the same page?
I guess I don't really view it in that way. I view my singing and my music as just something that I love to do, something that I'm very inspired by, something that fuels me, something I'm passionate about. Mm. And the fact that people enjoy it is amazing.
Mm.
So that's kind of how I view it. And during the show, there wasn't one moment where I thought, oh yeah, I'm gonna win, like, not at all. Like, there was just never that. There was only just wanting to do the best that I could and see how far I can go. Mm. Just do push myself and see how far I can go.
Mm. Now, the Staying Alive Foundation is not the only cause that you are very passionate about. What are the other charities and campaigns that you work with?
So I have a sanctuary called Hopefield Animal Sanctuary in Brentwood in Essex.
We will put the links to this in the
show
notes.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Thank you. And we have almost 300 animals, and all of them are rescued from abuse situations, or they have been abandoned. So we take them in and we let them live out the rest of their lives at Hopefield. So we don't adopt any animals out. And because they've been through too much trauma, they just need to stay in one place. And we're based on donations, so I do a lot of fundraising for them, a lot of awareness building for them. But the long-term goal with my animal rights campaigning is to change laws.
Mm.
So I've been involved in, like, the EU ban on animal testing, circus animal ban in the UK, I just think it's about changing the laws, really. Mm. So we can protect animals. And so that's one thing that I'm very passionate about. Mm. And is a big part of my life.
And you've been doing that for years. This isn't a recent thing. Are you beginning to see change?
Yeah, well, the EU animal testing ban is a huge change. I did a campaign with the Body Shop, and the Body Shop been campaigning for 25 years to get that.
Mm.
Through. So it was, there are changes for sure, but I feel like there still needs to be more change. And personally, I feel like if people are going to own animals, they should have a pet license.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you are, because I, you know, we deal with animals being abandoned all the time at Hopefield. I understand that sometimes there are situations where it's impossible to keep the animal, and that's. Mm. Fine. And if you reach out for help, that's fine. That's why we're here. But places like Hopefield need support from people, and we also need a bit of accountability for the animals that have been abused. So people need to be held accountable for that, and I feel like with pet licenses that could be something that could help that situation.
It must feel brilliant to be so passionate about a cause and to actually see that you are affecting change.
Yeah, it's been, again, so fulfilling. And, like, again, like, there's a destination, you get to it. Okay, the ban on animal testing in the EU is amazing. Now I want to ban animal testing around the world. Like, that's the next goalpost. Like, it definitely, I acknowledge the changes that have been made and the little successes, and take that into kind of fueling me for the next thing that we want to kind of get accomplished.
In other areas of your life, are you big at goal setting? Do you sort of sit down and think, this is what I want to achieve here? Do you think that's valuable?
Yeah, I do. And I've looked back at some of, like, I'll write down, like, things, and I'll write down, like, 1 year goals and 3 year goals and 5 year goals, and I'll look at them and, like, reflect back on, like, oh, did, like, what happened there and what happened here, and sometimes, like, no, I don't achieve any of them. You know, it just doesn't happen, but the little ones that I do, I'm really proud of.
Yeah, there's lots of actual data and research to suggest that if you write down your goals, you're much more likely to achieve them.
Yeah, I agree. I do.
Do you keep diaries or your song?
Yeah,
your song,
I've got, like, well, my songwriting is definitely my diary. That's, like, my heart and soul. But I have, like, I journal a lot as well. And I definitely write down different goals and things that I want to achieve. And little plans.
Do you just do it in a notepad, or do you ever use anything like the 5 minute journal?
Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah. I haven't used that, but yeah, I've just got, like, a little notepad.
Ah.
Yeah.
Do you keep a library of them?
I've got, like, yeah, 3 books full of stuff.
Do you have a particular time of day that you might do that more than another?
I don't do it every single day. Probably more like once a week, maybe. But usually with the goals, I'll do a big one at the beginning of the year. That's the most important one, I feel, like, for me personally.
We had an incredible panel out there today. You were joined by Laura Whitmore, by Georgia, who is also going to be on this podcast.
Yeah.
And Mala.
Yeah.
Incredible, incredible women. And we are a few days post International Women's Day.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of talk about supporting other women. A lot of women listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
And probably have goals and aspirations. What would you like to say to other women who are trying to reach their goals or trying to pursue their passions?
I would say that, like I said in the chat, that the heart of the women's movement is women supporting women. I've benefited from that because I've had really strong females in my life, like my mum, my aunties, my friends. So I feel like it's very important for us to be supportive of each other. And I feel like, you know, achieving goals, and in my line of work, music, it's all collaboration. I co-create with everyone around me, from my amazing manager, who's a female I've been working with for 10 years, because I'm all about supporting females, especially in the music side, the business side of music, because it's so imbalanced out there. It's so male dominated, and that has a trickle down effect to the artists that are, you know, representing females. So I'm all about supporting that. And I wouldn't be able to do what I do without her, without Laura, who's amazing.
Laura's in the room. Say hi, Laura.
Yeah.
Say hi. And strong women around me that are, and we're helping each other. So I feel like I said, it's collaborative, and we should all be really just lifting each other up.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I'm sure the listeners agree. We're going to have to wrap it up because your time is so limited today. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
It's really, and I love that. I can't believe I've committed Leona Lewis to audio. I'm so happy.
Oh,
it's going on my CV immediately.
Oh, I love that. Thank you.
I'm now thrilled to say that I am joined by Georgia Arnold, who is the executive director of the MTV Staying Alive Foundation, who we're here with today. We also who have collaborated with Kiehl's, and we have Patricia in the room, so let's just deal with that.
Hi. I wasn't expecting that. Hello.
Soz.
Kiel's collaboration with MTV Staying Alive, this is the third year.
Yes.
That you've collaborated. I remember last year was Tiny Tempo.
Two years ago.
No, 2 years ago. Because I did a very cool animated thing that took me about an hour to do on Instagram. with a pod of moisturiser. This year, it's the eye cream.
Yes, it is.
And what is going to the foundation with every sale?
So every product sold, £10 of each product will go to the foundation, and the product will be out in June.
Fabulous. Well, the links to that product will be in the show notes, and when that then becomes available, I will flag that up. But for now, we're talking to Georgia, who said to me, hello, who said to me not a few moments ago, can we talk about cardio Pilates? So let's just go straight in there.
We're starting.
We have to. We will talk about the Staying Alive Foundation, okay. Because it's having its 20th anniversary
this year. Next year, yes.
So you've been working with them since day one.
I have.
Is it your baby?
It's my baby. Apart from my baby, who's now 18, mm-hmm. my real life baby. But
is your eldest child.
Yes. So I actually started working at MTV 23 years ago. As
cripes, I bet that was fun.
Yes. Possibly not for the podcast. There was about 100 people in the office. If you had an idea for a program, like there was an assistant here who wanted to do something on headbanging, and that turned into Headbangers Ball. That was her. She came up with the idea, and there you go.
Mind blown.
And that's sort of what you could do at the time. Mm. So not like that now. I mean, it's great, but it's not. It's at the time it was like literally you could be walking down the street and you could get spotted to come and work at MTV because you had the right look and feel, and it was run by people who were really passionate about what they were doing but didn't necessarily know how to run a company in the way that we do today. So that's when I started, and I came in for an interview when this building, so this is the old TVAM building.
Is it really?
Yes. And I
that's
came
such a
in.
Geek. Sorry, and, is it really?
And in fact, we used to have. In fact, we probably still do. We couldn't take down the TVAM sign down the side of the building, so we had to just put round circles on it. And the egg cups are still here.
I was going to ask if
they're
the egg
still
cups
here.
Here.
Yeah, we can show you them later.
Yes, I'm going to need that tool.
Okay. So I came in and I had an interview on boxes outside David Frost's office. And it was about 6:30 in the evening, and I phoned up my friend and said, this old guy wants to interview me in a building site. I was in a phone box, because obviously it was that long ago. If I don't call you in a couple of hours, come and get me. And it was a totally above board, like the head of HR was there, but we were just on cardboard boxes. And I ended up as his PA. And so I had $5,000 charity budget, which even back then was not a lot of money. That was like my only responsibility other than being his PA. And he used to say to me, right, well, my friend from the record label has got a Nordoff Robbins dinner, so let's buy a table for $1,000. And that's how we used to spend it. There was no reason about how we spent our money. And so he said to me, look, MTV's growing. We have grown from one channel across Europe to being individual channels in every country. So actually, we should care about something. So go and find something we should care about. Mm. So I have no background or training in this, which is very typical. Like today, if someone wanted my job, they'd probably need like a master's in development. Or
so true, isn't it?
And I definitely don't have any of that. And so it was mid-90s, so HIV was rampant, people were dying every day from it in ridiculous numbers, and it was young people who was dying. So it wasn't very hard to sort of link the dots together and go, this is what we should care about. Mm. And I remember going for a meeting with UNAIDS, which had just set up, and they said, it would be brilliant if you could do a documentary about young people affected and infected by HIV. Mm. And I said, yeah, it's not very MTV though, is it? I mean, literally, that was my response. I was like, nah, let's not do that. Mm. It's boring. And I came back here and someone said to me, no, we could do that. We'll get a talent to host it. And so we got George Michael, the late and great George Michael, to host the very first documentary. Mm. And I was super excited. I was 9 months pregnant and I got to meet him. And so my idol. And I was sure, you know, maybe he would meet me. And even though I was 9 months pregnant and even though he was with his boyfriend and very much gay, I possibly could still turn him. I didn't. I'll just point
Hope
that
is
out.
A wonderful, wonderful
Isn't
thing.
Isn't it? Yeah. Yes. But anyway, he was doing a very brilliant thing for us by hosting the documentary. And what we decided was that we would create it rights cleared and cost free. So we would give it away to anyone. So you could phone up and ask for a copy of the documentary, or a university or a youth group or another broadcaster.
Mm.
And so what we created was this brand on MTV that was just able to grow around the world because people wanted it. Because we had George Michael host a documentary, Missy Elliott, Puff Daddy, Beyonce hosted something for us. So we had these amazing music talent.
Yeah.
So we started distributing it. And then I wrote to Nelson Mandela's office. It was coming up to his 85th birthday, so 2003. And I said, our audience outside of Africa don't actually know Mandela's story, which is shocking. If you say that to anyone in the continent, they are shocked.
Mm.
And I said, but our audience don't really know who he is, so can I tell his story? And they agreed. And so we took four young people, and each of their lives reflected a piece of his life. So we had Henry from Uganda, who lived in a fishing village on the lakes, on the border with the DRC. His family, he is HIV positive, and his family had been wiped out because of AIDS. And he sat there with Mandela and said, when you started to fight apartheid, did you really believe that you'd ever see the end of it? Because here I am fighting AIDS, and even though I'm very active, I'm beginning to lose hope that we can ever see the end of it.
Mm.
So they had a conversation around that. And then Min Zin from Burma, who talked about living in exile in Thailand, and Guy from Israel, whose sister had been killed by a suicide bomber, sat with Jumana from Palestine, whose father had been killed by the Israeli army, which was very tense and difficult to organise. And the two of them sat there with Mandela and said, how did you ever shake the hands of your enemy? So it was this incredible...
Mm.
Won awards, amazing documentary, and we spent a few days with Mandela, amazing. But we also filmed with each of the four in their home environment, and we were looking in the edit at Henry's story. And Henry, very horribly stereotypical, he lived in a corrugated shack, he wrote by candlelight when the light ran out, you know, he had nothing.
Mm.
But he was amazing. And we realized with Henry, what does he actually need to do a little bit more? So he needs someone to trust him. He needs a little bit of money, not a lot, but everyone does. And he needs some more formal training.
Mm.
And it was because of Henry that we turned from being a brand on MTV into being a foundation. So we're now a charity. We're the only charity in the world that gets to use the MTV brand. And we are there to help prevent HIV infection amongst young people by both producing content, and we still do that. We have this amazing drama just launched in South Africa called MTV Sugar, but by giving out grants. And today, Henry, who we never gave a grant to, by the way. So a couple of years ago, we gave him the Inspiration Award behind setting up the foundation, and we paid for his master's so that we, because we realised we'd never given him a grant, but we had just used his ethos to create the foundation. He now is living in Canada. He's very healthy. He has just had a baby, and he sits on the board of the foundation as well. And he is the most incredible. I always think that Mandela transferred something to him when they met. We had a board meeting at the end of the year, and three times he made people cry because of the good words that he said.
Right.
Not because he was being nasty, but he opens his mouth, and he's one of those people where you can genuinely see their aura. Like, he really touches you when he speaks. So he's amazing. So that's how it got set up.
And I was saying to Patricia before,
this Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And MTV is the reason I know about safe sex.
Hmm. And I love it when people say that.
Because I remember the ads. I mean, I was glued to MTV constantly. And I remember all of the safe sex ads. I remember that a lot of artists were very outspoken about AIDS and about safe sex and about condoms, and kind of took the taboo away from using words like condom on television.
And those were probably all Staying Alive ads without you realising.
Yeah.
And that's why we work with people like Leona, who, because it's, we always have to work with artists because you sort of expect that because it's an MTV branded charity. And they then get to sort of reach out to an even bigger audience than we can do just with MTV.
Yeah. So you have your interview on the boxes.
Yes.
And you get into this role and it starts building and building and building. When did you... At some point, obviously, a passion kicked in. Like, it really became very important to you. And listening to the panel, the link to the Facebook Live is going to be in the show notes so you can watch that full discussion. But there seems to be something very transformative about getting involved with this foundation. You see it firsthand and you're in.
Well, I mean, I'd like to think it's just the foundation. I think it's the issue. So I have no background in HIV or development whatsoever. I did a really bad media degree at a polytechnic. You know, I had I didn't have training in this at all. I knew nothing about HIV. And once you get sucked into the issue, it will never let you go in a good way. You know, the way that it has devastated people's lives and also turned amazing people into incredible activists as well. And the virus sort of does spark off a real passion around it. And so for me, I can never walk away from it.
It was interesting what you were saying in the on the Facebook Live about I'm going to check my notes because I wrote it down because I couldn't quite believe it. Is it the number two killer globally of young people?
Yep, and the number one around the world.
So I found that really shocking, and it was said in the Facebook Live, and so I feel like I can admit my ignorance without feeling too ashamed. I did feel like it was a problem that had gone away.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised you say that. And the here in the West, so in the UK, if you find out that you're HIV positive, it's absolutely not a life sentence. Mm-hmm. You go to the NHS, they can provide you with treatment. When you're on treatment, it suppresses your viral load, which means it becomes much harder to infect someone else. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's always good to know your status, so you can get onto treatment if you need to. And what happens is you go on treatment, which isn't very nice, by the way. It's like people say, well, you can live this very healthy, normal life. It's horrible, the drugs that you have to take. It gives you, like, it makes you sick, diarrhea, you can get these disgusting fat deposits. Like, this is not like an easy way to live your life.
It's not a pill and you're fine.
No.
Right, okay.
But nevertheless, it absolutely keeps you alive and well. You can go into work, go into school, no problem. But after, let's say, a decade, your body probably will begin to reject those drugs or just not work as well, and your viral load goes up and suddenly you're becoming ill more easier. Okay. And so what the doctors here will do is go, well, okay, that cocktail of treatment doesn't work anymore. We're going to put you on the next generation. So here in the UK, you're probably on the 7th or 8th generation drugs. Mm-hmm. So if you are born with HIV or if you contract it at a young age, you're pretty much fine for as long as you live, and they continue to develop even better drugs. What's going on, though, in the rest of the world is that there's only, in sub-Saharan Africa, second-generation drugs. So if you were born with HIV, by the time you are 17, you may have got through both versions of drugs that you can access. And so what's your next option? There isn't one. And that's why amongst adolescents, the death rate in the last 10 years has gone up by 50%. So every other demographic, the death rate has gone down, but amongst adolescents, the death rate is increasing. And no, it's like a real silent part of HIV. The activists aren't getting involved. And, you know, the great thing is there are organisations like the Global Fund and PEPFAR and all of the governments, they do fund treatment in countries, where in the developing world. but they're only funding up to second generation drugs because beyond that it's so expensive. Mm. So here we're sitting pretty, but when you come from Cameroon, like Mala, who's here today and was in the Facebook live,
incredible. I thought she was an incredible woman.
She is an incredible woman.
So eloquent.
Yes, I love her. Mm. But you know, when you come from Cameroon, you have not got the options available to you that you do if you sit in London. And that's why I always think we have to be really careful when we complain about inequality or, you know, discrimination amongst women, which is true and absolutely, and we all experience it at some point in our lives. Mm. But it's so different when you're in different countries, and there it's much more life-threatening than anything that we would experience.
Right. Wow. It's such a... I always... For people who work in this way, who campaign for a particular issue, you sit across from me, very steady, very pragmatic, and not clinical, that's not the right word, but you're able to compartmentalise.
Mm.
How do you... It's a real emotional issue, but you have to... Obviously, at some point, you have to sort of set your emotions aside in order to be able to really affect change. How do you do that?
Okay, well, first of all, I should say, even when my son was born, I didn't even cry. So I'm like the most unemotional person you can possibly meet, which is, there's some, that's weird. But I would say, because actually most of the time we're dealing with the positive. Mm-hmm. So when the work that we do, we're meeting people like Mala who are doing amazing stuff. Mm-hmm. So that for me is not something to be sad about. That's really positive.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's been interesting? So this new drama that's we've just launched in South Africa, MTV Sugar, some of the scenes in that are really hard to watch. So we have a lot of rape scenes, we've got an illegal abortion scene, we've got a young boy who comes out as being gay and how his family and friends deal with that. And I watch the rushes, so I watch all of the filming that happens before it's edited, and some of it is so hard to watch that I've had to message the actors and check in on them that they're okay, because they're putting so much into it. So it's funny that I can be affected by something that I know is fictional and not necessarily by the stories or the individuals that I meet on the ground. But what we tend to see, we tend to see people very active and doing positive, turning everything around to be positive. You know, you look at Henry. I mean, Henry's his family had been wiped out because of AIDS. And even recently, even like in the last couple of years, his sister had died. So it wasn't even back in, you know, 18 years ago, whenever it was. But he only is a positive person who wants to make good change.
Mm.
That's not very eloquent, but...
with people like me who say, oh, I kind of thought it had gone away, or I thought you could live with it now, and not understanding this huge issue that's happening globally, how do you keep pushing forward? Have you ever felt at times a bit defeated?
Yes. When my mum says to me, oh, I read in the newspaper, aka the Daily Mail, that there's a cure for AIDS. That's great. And that really frustrates me. It's just the whole media, or, you know, when gay men are castigated for wanting access to a drug that can prevent them from getting HIV, that, you know, the stigma involved with sex, it just astounds me. You know, sex is, none of us, unless any of us here, I don't want to make assumptions, were born out of a test tube. We all came here because of sex. And it drives me crazy that we can't talk openly about it. When Covey, my son was 18, no, not 18, he's 18 now, when he was 8. So I was, we had the MTV award show was taking place in Liverpool. And
I was there.
You were there?
I was there. It was when the day that Obama won the election.
Yes. Very good.
Kanye West came on and sang American Boy, and at the end there was a big thing of Obama and then Red, White and Blue.
There you go.
That's one of my big moments.
Right.
Okay, so, yes. Maybe that's where we met.
Maybe that was.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Put a pin in that.
Okay, we'll come back to that. So I wanted Covey to come, and so he had to take a couple of days off school. So I went to his teacher, who was young, and said, can he go off school to take, I want to take him to this award show. And she said, oh, that's so cool, because she was young, she thought that was really cool. She said, what do you do? So I started trying to explain to her, and Covey is holding my hand, he rolls his eyes, he goes, oh, basically, miss. My mum just gets paid to talk about sex all day long. And I like looked at her and she looked at me and she went, are you a sex phone operator?
Oh, amazing. Amazing. I would have let her believe it for at least a few minutes.
I'm sure I am still the talk of that primary school. But you know, for me, brilliant. If we could all be paid to talk about sex all day long,
yeah,
that would be amazing. Because that's why we're all embarrassed about it, because it's seen as this taboo subject. And it's a cultural thing. It's a religious thing. Mm. It's a parent thing. It's an everything thing. And actually, we should all sit here and just talk about the great sex or the really bad sex or the meh sex or the fact I haven't had sex in so long conversations. But we should all do that much more openly. Then we could solve a lot of problems in the world.
Do you think there's also a thing about certain charities are fashionable at certain times?
Oh, yes.
You couldn't move for... I mean, I had red ribbons always.
Yeah, there's definitely a moment in time.
And I remember The Real World, I think it was season two, Pedro Zamora.
Zamora? I don't know. I should know, really, but...
I had his picture in my cubicle at school. Did you? I thought he was a lovely guy.
I remember really clearly when he died, because I had... It wasn't long after I started work here.
And wasn't he 23 or something crazy?
Really young. Mm. And it was amazing that MTV took him on. It could have even been season one.
Season one was New York.
Oh, she's so good. God. I love it.
You can tell I didn't need that.
Yeah, love it. Amazing. So, but the fact that they said, yes, we will have an openly, someone who's HIV positive living in this house. Mm. Because remember, I mean, it still happens today, but particularly back then, there were so many myths about if I share a glass with him, if I, you know, take a food off his plate, if I sit on the same toilet seat, would I catch it? And so that was amazing. And it was so devastating. Mm. And today, Pedro would not die.
Yes.
You know, he would still be alive and well, but not if Pedro was born in wherever, Malawi. You know, that's the sort of the weird way the world works.
How do you not get sucked into that vortex of that is a fundamental injustice?
I get really angry. I mean, that's the bit that really gets me. What really gets me is the politics of it all, right? And because... HIV is incredibly political. So one of the reasons why it was originally trendy was because lots of famous people were HIV positive, right? So that was a good thing. Oh, yay, brilliant. Someone famous has got it, then we can talk about it. Mm. But one of the reasons why it doesn't get a lot of money, has never really got that much money, is because it involves sex. Right. So the US government, who have funded us an enormous amount, but originally under George Bush, the way that they were able to fund HIV was, let's fund treatment. We won't fund prevention, because if we fund prevention, we have to talk about dirty stuff, like sex and drugs.
Right.
And gay sex. Mm. You know, so we can't talk about that.
Right.
It got much better, particularly under Obama. You know, he went to Kenya and told the Kenyans off that it's still illegal to be gay in that country, right? Amazing. And now we have Trump. Mm-hmm. And it is devastating for the female race, his policies. So his policies are devastating around pregnancy, safe abortion, HIV, just having babies safely. He is going to destroy enormous amounts of that for years to come. And it gets me really angry.
Because you said something that I found quite moving in the Facebook Live, where you said, and I did write it down, but as you can see, I've sort of written in, you know, it looks like a real scribble. The current political climate, the best thing to come out of it is the activism that it bears, that it spurns. I can't remember exactly what you said.
Something like that.
But do you feel... as of last November, you're like, right, okay, boots on, sleeves up, we've now, this is the hardest phase of this, almost.
I think the best thing about the political climate is that people are engaged, that you don't really, you know, if it's someone who's not necessarily of your political views, but they're not so dramatic, that you just don't really care, you can't be bothered. Mm. The thing that Trump is making us do is we're all going into really far corners away from each other and want to fight. Mm. What I hope is that it continues. What I'm actually really worried about at the moment is that people will go, do you know what? It's not going to change, so I'm just not going to do anything. And I really hope that people are encouraged against it. There was a meeting a couple of weeks ago, or last week, with governments and foundations who are putting together a pot of money specifically around family planning, because that is losing billions of dollars because of Trump's global gag rule, which was the immediately after the Women's March, the very first executive order that he signed, the very first one, was to cut off funding for any family planning or global health organization that uses the word, doesn't even practice, just talks about abortion. So you might want to say to someone, one of your options here in South Africa is you can either carry the baby and have it adopted if you don't want your baby, and you're 15 years old in KwaZulu-Natal. If you're a pregnant girl in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa, you have a 1 in 2 chance of being HIV positive, right? So those are crazy statistics. But let's say you're a 15-year-old girl who did not choose to have sex in the first place, and you end up pregnant, and you go to a clinic. That clinic, if it wants funding from the US government, cannot tell you that one of your options is a legal, because it's legal in South Africa, a legal abortion. And if they say that, then the US government will no longer fund you. So, and that's the choice. And, someone like Mary Stopes International have gone, well, fine, we have to continue to talk about abortion because we know that is necessary in cases. Mm. So they're no longer taking money from the US government. It's, but when you think about the implications of that, and what I said in the Facebook Live is, you've got, in northern Nigeria, you've got Mary Stopes doing vaccinations of polio for babies, but they can't afford to do that anymore. So it's not just stopping abortion, which, by the way, you're not going to stop the sex in the first place. Mm. And this is... I get very angry about it.
Yeah.
But I haven't figured out the solution
but
yet.
But somebody needs to be getting angry about this.
Yes. And well, not just somebody. Everybody needs to be getting angry about it. And girls and boys.
But somebody being somebody has to lead the charge.
Yes.
Because what I got from the Facebook Live, or even the interaction, I think even before we started filming, was you are the galvanising element in this. And Laura said it, Leona said it, Mala said it. Mala.
Yeah.
Said that, you could see that they look to you. You're kind of the guiding force. That's kind of a responsibility as well.
That's quite scary, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know what to say to that. I don't see myself in that way. Mm. I actually see myself looking to Mala, who, and what she has done in her life, which was get turned down by a whole bunch of people because she was too young and too untrustworthy to fund. Mm. And then we went, no, you're not young, and you are young, yes, but actually that's what we love about you, and you are really trustworthy. Why wouldn't we fund you? Because you're bang in the centre of it and you understand what the problem is.
That was another thing she said about how the MTV Foundation funds the young people. And I guess that's what MTV has always done. It's given a voice and it's given a vehicle to perhaps people who on paper shouldn't be ready to be given a responsibility.
Yeah.
That's clearly something that is continuing to happen.
And if we can't trust them, then no one's going to trust them.
Mm.
So it's being able to use the MTV brand to support young people. That's an amazing privilege to have, to be able to use the brand in that way.
Do you feel like young people are being overlooked at times? Their potential is perhaps being overlooked, or let's let you cook a bit longer, and when you're 18 you can do something.
I wonder if it's changing a bit now. I think, yeah, most people find it hard to give young people money, right? So what we know with our grantees is, so someone like Mala, she'll tell you she got turned down again and again and again because they said, you're too young, we don't trust you. Then we funded them and then they got money because they went, oh, well, if MTV trusts you and MTV's trained you, that's okay. So that's something. I think what social media has done, though, today with kids is give them that platform where they don't need to wait for an adult to tell them whether or not they're doing the right or wrong thing.
Mm.
Some of them, by the way, will definitely make mistakes on social media, but a lot of them are using it to find their passion and to be able to use that as their platform. And it's sort of adults like me do go on it, but we don't use it in the same way that they do. Like, Snapchat, forget it. Like, it's the one thing that my son, on the very rare occasion I've snapped him, he goes, "Mom, just, like, please stop it. It's embarrassing." Right? So they have their own private space there, which I think is really good.
Mm. And did you also provide mentors?
We do, yes. And we try and make them local, if we can, so that they have adult mentors where they can say, you know, "We've got a meeting with the mayor. How do we talk to the mayor, you know, in their local community? Or can you give advice on how to apply for this amount of money, or how we'd create a business plan?" Because everyone needs, you know, what Henry taught us, everyone needs guidance, and that's why we do that.
I loved the story that you told on the Facebook Live where you talked about going into the bathroom, going for a job interview, and they said, "When can you start?" And you said, well, now, I'll just pop to the ladies," and doing the munch scream in the mirror. I'm fascinated by that, because sometimes we have to fake it till we make it.
Yeah, it's true.
And Laura said something at the end of the Facebook Live where she said, you know, none of us have a clue, we're all kind of winging it.
Yeah.
There's real sort of power in sort of not knowing that you don't know what to do, but trying your best anyway.
Well, it's also really exciting. I mean, nothing gives you that adrenaline rush like being shit scared, you know, but thinking, "Oh, fuck it, I'm going to do it anyway."
Yeah.
Sorry, I just swore twice.
That's fine.
I apologise.
There's just a little button on iTunes. I click explicit.
Oh,
we're
cool.
Good to go.
Oh, good. but I do, I mean, I love what Leona said about, you know, "I like to be scared every day."
Yeah, that's
right?
Amazing.
And we all are, because if you're not scared, then life's really boring. Mm. If you're dialing it in, if you turn up at 9:30 and leave at 5:30, and there's nothing surprising in your day or nothing that freaks you out, it's dull. You know, I like a little bit of gentleness, but not too much.
Yeah. Do you mentor? I would imagine that you have quite a few people you check in with.
I do, actually. I love it. I really like it. At the moment, I have a few on the go, because once I start to mentor them, they don't...
You can't stop.
Well, yeah, they go, "Oh, I know our year's up, but can I carry on?" Because we've got a really good mentorship program here. Because I do, by the way, have two jobs. So I also...
Oh.
Yeah. So I run the foundation, but I also work for Viacom, which includes MTV, Nickelodeon, Comedy Central, BET, and I run all their social responsibility. So Viacom pay my salary to do both jobs.
What does social responsibility mean?
So when I joined MTV, the words corporate social responsibility, CSR, had not been invented. And so I started this all up, but not knowing what it was about. Mm. So it's... Social responsibility for me is about being able to highlight social issues that are relevant to our audience.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what it means. So for Nickelodeon, it could be around getting more exercise or cyberbullying.
Mm-hmm.
On MTV, we have a really big campaign called MTV Breaks, which is about getting young people a career break. And how do we give them opportunity as well?
Because it's much harder. Laura talked about she did an open audition 9 years ago. You've talked about your interview. I know when I started, it was you could work your way in via making tea. It's not like that now. The landscape's very different. So MTV Breaks, which we'll put a link to in the show notes, is helping people get the foot in the door. Is that right?
So, and we do it in a few ways. But with what we did recently with MTV Sugar, we had a break to be a director and a photographer. And the direct one was, I loved it, it was amazing. So this South African guy won, and he spent 3 days with the director of the show shadowing him. He spent a day with a creative director, and then on the Friday, he was directing. And some of those scenes that we're seeing Sugar, this kid will have directed. And then we film his experience, so that goes up on air, and he actually gets something for his showreel that he can say, "I did this."
Mm.
And he had to have shown some talent in order to get that break.
Yep.
And around the EMAs, we'll do, you can become a costume designer or a makeup artist or a photographer or a social media blogger. And we give them all these amazing experiences. So those are the things. So I do love mentoring.
Mm.
I actually think it should be more encouraged that everybody at whatever, even, you know, kids who walk in as interns should be encouraged then to mentor others.
Mm.
There's a guy that I mentor who started off, I was doing a talk, like a careers talk at a school, and he came up to me and he's this huge guy. He's actually training to be an amateur boxer at the moment. He's a big guy. And he shakes my hand, which is like, you know, this bear hug. And I call him Big Sam. he's just called Sam, but you know, he's Big Sam. And so from that, he came in and did 2 weeks work experience in my team, because he just had something about him that I knew was really special. He then applied for the apprenticeship program here. He got it. And so he spent a year here as an apprentice. He then became an intern and did that for a year, and he now has a full-time job in consumer products, and he's being promoted, and I mentor him. But now what I'm telling him is he should go back and mentor the apprentices, because we should all, like, all of us do something that we can share with others, and I think that's really important to be able
paying
to do
it
that
forward.
Yeah.
Can you see the matrix? Can you just see something in people? I call it seeing the matrix.
Can I see the matrix?
I just think that certain people can just see a spark. I remember a friend of mine did some work with Gordon Ramsay, and she said he can just see it in people. There's a certain quality that he can just identify on sight in people, and he can hone it.
But is it the other way around? Do certain people have that spark that's really easy to spot? Like, if you met Big Sam, you'd go, that guy is amazing. Mm. And there is just something about him. If you met Henry, you know there's something amazing about him. So it's not that I spotted it, it's that they have it, I would say.
Oh, I like that. I do kind of like the idea of you seeing the matrix as well.
Yeah, me too. I can see the matrix.
So we've talked about all of that, but I do want to bring us back to cardio Pilates, because I can't reference at the beginning and not us talk about it. So you've got this incredible career, these two incredible responsibilities. One must find a way to chill out. And you do that with cardio Pilates.
I do. And my son, by the way. That's the other part of my life. But I really feel that I have to exercise just for my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And what's interesting is the last 2 weeks have been crazy, and I've been travelling and really burning the candle badly at both ends. And I haven't exercised much. And on Saturday, I woke up and I felt so ill.
Mm.
And not that I was coming down for it, I just felt awful. And on Saturday I had my cardio Pilates, and then on Sunday I just did normal Pilates. I feel so much better. And I'm really, like, a passionate advocate for it. So I have to, very boring, I have to exercise. I have a hip replacement and various knee and hip rebuilds. So I exercise to keep my body moving. So I love Pilates. I can do a 3-minute plank.
What?
Yes. Yep.
Challenge listeners, can anyone else tweet us?
But I started doing cardio Pilates, which is like the next step on, where it's a bit like what's it called when you
circuit training?
Thank you, circuit training. So you'll do something on the Pilates bed. So you might do like a jackknife. I don't know if you know any of this stuff, but you might do like a jackknife or a plank on the bed, and then you might have to do some boxing for a minute, and then you have to go back and do that, and then you have to do such good stuff. Like, you might do like a walking plank, and it, like, the trainer just pushes you, and I come away on a total high. I've not really exercised my whole life, but in the last few years now I'm so boringly obsessed. My friends, like, I can't even say it's just too so really it doesn't matter, but anyway, I love it, and it's good for your mental health. So I've encouraged my son, who's like very sporty, but he's doing his A-level, so he's given up football, and he's finished rugby now, so he has started to run. And that's really important, because it's good. Like, what he doesn't get is it's good for his brain as well. So he ran the Paris Half Marathon last weekend.
Oh, wow.
For Staying Alive.
That's amazing. So, is that something that listeners could do as well?
Yes, it would be amazing. Because to do a challenge event and raise money for us is brilliant. It gets you engaged, you understand a bit more about what we do, and then we make money to give back out to the grantees again.
Well, if anyone wants to run to raise money, perhaps we'll put the link to that in the show notes.
That would be lovely. That'd be fab.
I feel like our time is drawing near. I can see nodding heads, and I can hear doors going. It's been such a pleasure to speak to you.
Oh, it's been such fun.
Any final words that you would like to share with listeners about either the foundation or anything else that might be coming up that they can get involved in?
Well, okay, so for the foundation, yes, we would love your support, right? So go on to mtvstayingalive.org. There's lots of information there about what we do. And if you want to do challenge events, bake sales, anything, you know, any way you can support us is great. So that's number one. Number two, you might want to go to mtvsugar.com, which is S-H-U-G-A. Mm-hmm. I find that so hard to spell and pronounce at the same time. But it's a brilliant drama. It's a bit like Skins, but set in South Africa with sexual health messaging weaved through it. It's really brilliant. And
is that the kind of thing that you think any parents listening should show their children of an appropriate age?
Yes, and I'll tell you why. It's really hard to talk about sex for all of us. If you sit and watch it, you can have conversations and go, have you done that? What did you think about what they did? Do you think they should have made that decision? It's brilliant for a parent to watch who doesn't know the right questions to talk about their kid. And then the third thing to all of your listeners is talk about sex more. It's brilliant. It's funny. We all do it, if we're lucky or not, or if we're choosing not to. It's fantastic, and we should all talk about it more.
On that note, I just want to ask, because I watched the Amy Schumer special, which she talks a lot about sex. Is that the right kind of dialogue? I know, because you know when it's the sort of the ladette culture and the sort of being quite explicit, is that the right kind of dialogue? Is that what you mean?
Well, no, I think not. I mean, yes and no. Yes, if that's what you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But I think it's about just being in your space about being comfortable speaking about it. But the fact that we're all uncomfortable about it is wrong. And it's such a, like, aliens, I think, would land on this planet and go, but this is how you exist, so why don't you talk about it? It's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be explicit. Just talk about it.
Mm. Yes, and Salt and Pepper said it best.
Right.
Yes, they did. Bring it back to MTV Realness.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your
time.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode of The Emma Gunn Show featuring Leona Lewis and Georgia Arnold. If you're listening on iTunes, why don't you subscribe? And if you're feeling even fruitier, why not leave me a 5-star rating and review? You can also download and stream from my website, emmaguns.com. And you can follow me on social media at Emma Gunns on Twitter and at Emma Gunns on Instagram, which is where I tend to post updates of upcoming shows and also in the moment snaps with people as I'm interviewing them. So if you want a sneak peek of who's coming up, then that's definitely the place. Oh dear, maybe links aren't my strong suit this evening. Anyway, it's the place to follow it. So I hope you enjoyed that. Thank you for listening. Please do subscribe, follow, rate, review, all of those things. And there's an excellent show coming up in episode 51. So I will catch you then.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.